Doing more will require work with Congress. And I've said from the beginning, I'm willing to work with Democrats and Republicans to fix problems as they arise. This is an example of what I was talking about. We can always make this law work better. It is important to understand, though, that the old individual market was not working well. And it's important that we don't pretend that somehow that's a place worth going back to. Too often it works fine as long as you stay healthy. It doesn't work well when you're sick. So year after year, Americans were routinely exposed to financial ruin or denied coverage due to minor pre-existing conditions or dropped from coverage altogether, even if they paid their premiums on time. That's one of the reasons we pursued this reform in the first place. And that's why I will not accept proposals that are just another brazen attempt to undermine or repeal the overall law and drag us back into a broken system. We will continue to make the case, even to folks who choose to keep their own plans, that they should shop around in the new marketplace, because there's a good chance that they'll be able to buy better insurance at lower cost. So we're going to do everything we can to help the Americans who've received these cancellation notices. But I also want everybody to remember that there are still 40 million Americans who don't have health insurance at all. I'm not going to walk away from 40 million people who have the chance to get health insurance for the first time, and I'm not going to walk away from something that has helped the cost of health care grow at its slowest rate in 50 years. So we're at the opening weeks of the project to build a better health care system for everybody, a system that will offer real financial security and peace of mind to millions of Americans. It is a complex process. There are all kinds of challenges. I'm sure there will be additional challenges that come up. And it's important that we're honest and straightforward in terms when we come up with a problem with these reforms and these laws, that we address them. But we've got to move forward on this. It took 100 years for us to even get to the point where we could start talking about and implementing a law to make sure everybody's got health insurance. And my pledge to the American people is that we're going to solve the problems that are there. We're going to get it right. And the Affordable Care Act is going to work for the American people. So with that, I'm going to take your questions, and I'm going to start with Julie Pace of AP.
From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
The combination of the website problems and the...
Okay, you are listening to Boston Public Radio. I am Marjorie Egan. He is Jim Browdy. You've just been listening to a live press conference. Barack Obama, the President of the United States, addressing the messes and snafus and his fixes to the health care problem. And we have Governor Deval Patrick here. We're going to talk to him in just a second about his reaction to what the President had to say.
And part of what he had to say, is, if you just tuned in, was he talked about enrollment numbers, including close to 400,000 people who access healthcare through Medicaid in terms of the enrollees. And he also addressed the issue that people have been talking about quite a bit, the commitment he made that people could keep their own health plans. And he said through 2014, if you chose to do so, even if it did not meet the minimum threshold of coverage of the Affordable Care Act, you would be entitled to do that should you choose to do so. Here to give his reaction to this and virtually everything else, as he does once a month, would be the governor of the Commonwealth, Deval Patrick. Pleasure to see you, Governor.
Nice to see you both. Nice to see you both. And my first reaction is, I can't believe the president cut into my time with you.
It's outrageous.
It's
really
ridiculous.
He should have checked with you.
I know.
What was your reaction?
Well, I get it. What he's proposed, I guess, is what he's ordered is a is the option for insurers to continue old policies that don't meet the minimum standards of the ACA for a period of time, as long as people, those insurers are in, inform their customers that those existing policies are inadequate and what is lacking, and that they have options to get a better policy under the marketplace. Okay, if that's a temporary patch, maybe that's helpful. But the basic question of how we, through a market-based solution, which is what this is, provide adequate insurance and the security of adequate insurance to everybody still remains, which means They got to get the systems right so people can get in.
By the way, we got thrown off a little bit here. The governor is here to take your questions and ours for the hour. The number to get to him directly is 877-301-8970. You don't seem terribly happy about this decision. I mean, many people think that Bill Clinton started the ball rolling with his statement the other day. There's a vote tomorrow on a Republican proposal to do essentially the same thing this guy Upton from Michigan that has apparently some Democratic support. This was done as a political necessity, not as necessarily great health care policy, correct?
Well, you know, there's so much about health care which has been kind of soaked in politics for a long time in this country. It's not just with the ACA and the rollout of it. I think what you're seeing in my face, and maybe those of you listening.
Oh, by the way, they can see you too at WGBHnews.org. My apologies.
I think your head is in the way. isn't the camera?
It's
right
always
above
in the way. Yes, it is. Thank you, Governor. Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Marjorie, right?
Okay, fine.
You have the best line, if we would divert for just 1 second, about Jim Browdy. Do you remember what you've always said?
Let's save it for a year from now.
Okay, fine. Go ahead.
Anyway, I was just going to say that the ACA in particular is in this pathetic kind of dynamic in Washington, where you have the proponents, for the people who believe that folks should not have health care, that it shouldn't be delivered in a market-based solution like this. Most of them hard right Republicans, who have been looking to undermine this from the beginning and are sitting around rooting for the problems of implementation, as if they are sorry that it isn't being smoothly implemented when they didn't want it implemented in the first place. And then you have on the other side what I perceive to be, and I say this respectfully, but folks in the Obama administration who are so understandably conscious about that larger dynamic that they aren't surfacing, I think, all of the issues that come with a big complex rollout initiative like this in time enough, not just to communicate with a larger public, but to create an atmosphere to fix them. So you've got this weird kind of, you know, yes, there's a problem, but we can't really say anything about it, because if we say anything about it, then the people who want it to fail will seize on that. It's just nuts.
Well, you know, there has been some concern locally, and we just got an email about this from Louise Marie Pardon. I forgot my glasses, so I have to put my—
You do have on your movie star shades.
My movie star shades. This is from Louise Marie talking about in Massachusetts, Massachusetts Health Connector, which has traditionally worked pretty well.
Very well, yeah.
It's almost as if it's been infected by the Affordable Care Act virus. She says, Louise Marie, I am one of the 150,000 Massachusetts residents eligible for subsidized health insurance, required to sign up for the new affordable care coverage beginning January 1st. And she, like many other people, trying for weeks, spent endless hours on the website, on the phone, still doesn't have insurance. I am getting scared, she says, I won't have health coverage in January. And I should point out, the Herald reported earlier this week that there were these weird things that people with hyphenated names couldn't get on the system, and people at the end of signing up had to claim that they were in jail or in a mental facility with mental health problems to sign up. Now, supposedly those have been fixed, but it is—
There's another one like that. It's, you know, I didn't realize this, but some Social Security numbers aren't numbers. They have letters in them.
I didn't know that.
Apparently the system also wasn't set up to accept letters in a Social Security number. So that, I mean, it's a fix, but this is actually quite a lot. Marjorie, I'm sorry, you didn't finish your question.
That's okay. Well, she is understandably concerned, scared, as she says, that it's now November 14th.
Yeah.
She's afraid in six weeks.
What's her name?
I'll give you the email before you go. Her first name is Louise Marie.
So Louise Marie?
Yes, that's her email. She just emailed.
To Louise Marie and others, individuals who are dealing with what is basically a slow website right now, don't be afraid. Nobody's going to get thrown off and be uninsured. First of all, January 1 is not the deadline here. It's March. It's the end of March. It's a relatively small number of people. Frankly, we're trying to figure out whether it's possible just to move everybody who's already on Commonwealth care into Connector care, which is the ACA equivalent, basically, that we've designed. Nobody's going to be left out. You can call and get signed up that way rather than wait for the website to be as smooth as we'd like. And we're staffing up in the call center in order to enable that. Just to go beyond the individuals, though, who are eligible for subsidies, if you're a small business, it works pretty well right now, end to end. If you're not
subsidized, individuals thing.
It's not all individuals. It's the individuals who are eligible for subsidies, because the subsidies are in a variety of forms. Some of them are direct. Some of them are tax related, and you gotta get the right one so that you don't get you don't get dinged at the end of the year, at the end of next year when you file your taxes. But if you're a small business, for example, and you're trying to see what your options are for yourself and your employees, you can get in and get out end to end. It's pretty smooth. If you there's a lot of volume, right?
Right.
So that will slow it down a little bit. But if you're an individual without subsidies, you can also get in end to end. It's pretty straightforward. The subsidies, I say, are the complexity. And we're working that out. It gets a little better every day.
Just one last thing on this. I know that the open enrollment continues to March 31st,
mm-hmm.
but lots of these people that are worried are claiming that they're in a particular situation, whether they're coming from a private insurer or whatever, that their policy is running out.
I understand.
At the end of the year.
No,
so
I totally get it.
They've got six weeks.
I totally get it.
Okay.
And, I met only yesterday. My team does constantly, but I met only yesterday with the leadership of the Connector, which is our version of the exchange, as you know, and to get briefed by them, to hear what they saw as the obstacles are, what their deadlines are, and my instruction to them is overcompensate, under promise if you have to, rather than say it's definitely going to be this date and everything's great, because we know how that is. You'll be the first one to say, "Aha!
Right.
It was December 2nd, not December 1st."
Yep.
But don't be shy about saying, "I need this additional resource. I need some help. I need a solution that we can't that we haven't devised all on our own." Because I do think that there is a this is sort of back to my problem about my point about the problem I see in the environment in Washington, which is that they don't have in the Obama administration the environment to operate where they can make an honest mistake or say, "Honestly, I'm not quite sure we have the best solution to this individual glitch," or what have you, without people saying, "See, I told you, we are so advantaged." I would put it more positively. We are so advantaged here in the Commonwealth that the coalition that invented healthcare was so broad, and that coalition has stuck together to refine it as we've gone along.
Since we got a late start because the president was speaking, Governor, why don't we take some calls almost right away?
Okay.
Governor Patrick.
Harry is calling from Alston. Harry, are you there?
Hi, Harry.
Hi, Governor. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Hey, so, Governor, I'm one of many Alston residents who are really excited about the Mass Pike straightening project you announced last month.
Yeah.
I think it's great. You know, MassDOT is doing so many wonderful things these days with Green Dot and the Fast 14 and the new Healthy Transportation Directive.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, the reason I'm calling is that
I feel a butt coming, though, Harry. What's
how about an and also?
Okay.
So we're also concerned in the neighborhood that this plan needs to be more than about just straightening the turnpike, but
yep.
that it also needs to focus on reconnecting the Alston neighborhoods that were split in half by the turnpike 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And where this is specifically or really timely right now is that there's a $10 million MassDOT maintenance project planned for next year on a Mass Pike overpass bridge on Cambridge Street, which is
in Alston? In Alston, Harry?
In Alston, a stone's throw from where the pike's going to be straightened out.
Okay.
And this bridge is really messed up. It's terrible for biking. It's terrible for walking. It's not ADA compliant. And none of these projects can be fixed by just a maintenance project.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the neighborhood is hoping is that this bridge can get rolled into the much larger turnpike straightening project so that when it's fixed right.
Are you talking about the one down by the pizzeria? By
absolutely. You've been there.
When you come out, you come up JFK, I guess it is, and you turn right there at the gas station, and then you come over that bridge before you get to the next light?
Yep.
Okay.
That's the one.
I'll look at that.
That would be great.
I'll look at that.
We know that you had a really crucial role in the decision to build the new pedestrian bridge over Storrow Drive next to the Longfellow Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be a wonderful project. And it would just be fantastic to have your support on this project here in Alston so that you know, this bridge, there's an amazing proposal by Tom Dedarian to build a Boston Strong Memorial Bridge for pedestrians to cross the turnpike, which I hope you've seen.
I haven't.
There's just tremendous potential to really do something great, but that can't happen if DOT rushes ahead with this maintenance project, and then we're stuck with really a substandard bridge for the next 50 years.
So, Harry, on that bridge, if you just hang on, let me get some information. I'm sure there is a public process. It sounds like you would know what that is, but if not, I will make sure you get plugged into that and DOT into your point of view. I'll come back to the straightening out of the turnpike, though, for people who may not know what this is about. If you travel the turnpike going, let's say you're coming into the city, so traveling east, when you're coming up to Alston, the before the Alston tolls, the turnpike makes a big left turn and then a big right turn after the tolls back over by the, I guess it would be, is it BU or Northeastern right there?
BU.
Is it BU?
BU.
So the playing field and the high-rise dorms.
Yeah, luxury high-rise dorms.
They're
great.
Pretty nice.
It's beautiful.
Some of the best views in the city.
Yes.
And because of the deal we made to buy the rights of way for the Worcester Line, and actually in that same package for South Coast Rail, we now own the land that runs alongside the train tracks, which go straight. And so it would say we're going to do the open road tolling anyway, as you know. We've talked about that on the show before. We're going to straighten out the pike at that point, so it's a straight line. Reconnect the land on the – that would be south side of the pike, Harry, I think, with Alston land that Harvard and others own, which
yep.
creates opportunity for some marvelous new ways of thinking about the neighborhood and – you know, where the next expansion opportunities are for Boston, and I fully expect that the neighborhood will be involved in that. And
we hope so. And
the
best way to describe
congestion.
That project is you'll have about 5,000 new fans a day who won't be stuck in the Mass Pike off ramp, DoubleTree Hotel,
yeah, right.
River Street Bridge
right,
intersection,
right,
which is probably one of the worst in the state. And this
it might
really
be one of the worst in the country.
Hey, Harry, stay on hold, and our producers will get the number and give it to the governor's office, and obviously you will hear from them. Governor, I want to go back to the phones.
Okay. Mike is calling from Palmer. Mike, you there?
Hi, Mike.
Yes, I am.
Sorry to keep you holding.
I have a question for the governor.
Yeah.
That's okay. I have a question for the governor.
Mm-hmm.
If a $1 billion casino was proposed for Richmond, Mass.,
yeah.
would you fight for it or against it? And I really want an answer to that question. And in addition, with three casinos in Massachusetts, everybody would live within a 50-mile radius of a casino. Don't you think the people should have had a vote before the legislature passed the casino law?
We got it, Mike. Thank you for your call.
So, Mike, on your first question, I can't speak for my neighbors in Richmond. You ask about Richmond just so everyone knows because my family and I live in Richmond. I would vote against it personally. And the law that was enacted by the legislature in a democratic process provides that local residents get a say in whether they want a facility in their community. So as I say, I can't speak for my neighbors. I would vote against it. In terms of whether everybody should get to vote on the question, like I said, we have a democratic process where the legislature is supposed to take up those kinds of issues on behalf of the rest of us. And there were robust debates over a couple of years time. I think I'm right that there's a referendum on the
Milford is Tuesday.
The referendum
coming up.
I think there's a statewide ballot initiative.
Well, what's happening, actually, I was going to ask, and Mike, thank you for the call. Just so they are collecting signatures. Mm-hmm. Originally, Martha Coakley, who's got the jurisdiction, ruled that it violated the Constitution.
Oh,
the judge allowed them to collect signatures. Mm-hmm. The SJC will decide if they can go ahead. And if they do go ahead, they could repeal the whole law on the ballot next November
next
when people are voting for governor. And on that note, if I can, and obviously Mike's from Palmer, where there was a vote, I think it went down by 97 votes the same day that by 12% it lost in
East Boston.
East Boston. And obviously,
but it's actually an interesting. I'm sorry.
Oh no, go right ahead, Governor.
It's actually an interesting point. You said the margin was 97.
97, I think.
97 votes.
I think it was. Yeah.
I mean, it's you know, people feel some people have real passion on either side of this, question, and you know, I'm not going to speak for the wisdom of a facility in Palmer or in any other particular community. But the vote shows that it wasn't a slam dunk, that there wasn't necessarily a consensus view in that community. And I think that's exactly the kind of thing that the bill was meant to provide for.
And the law you signed would allow for up to 3 casinos and a slot parlor. But it seems, Governor, even though I know you're legal counsel and you believe that the Aquinnah tribe on the Martha's Vineyard does not have a right to build what they say will be a modest casino there, we are facing a potential of 5 casinos, 3 commercially licensed, 2 Native American, 1 in Southeast, 1 on Martha's Vineyard, and a slots parlor. Does that not worry you? That could be the outcome of this process.
I don't – well, if I thought that was going to be the outcome, I wouldn't sign the bill because I do think that's too much. You know, you can have a parade of horrors, if you will, that leads to that result. But I don't think that's going to happen.
How do you feel – speaking of horrors, how do you feel – I'm sorry. I didn't know you were –
No, I was just going to say on the Aquinnah, you know, where we've had a lot of activity. I actually spoke to the chairwoman right before I came in.
Of the tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And what was that?
She's great. She's great. Well, you know, we'll visit. I just wanted to acknowledge her letter, which, frankly, I'd heard about from a reporter before I saw it. And I told her that. But you know, they're entitled to the respect of a sovereign nation, and she is as a leader. We have a lot of unambiguous or unequivocal legal opinion that again, due respect to the tribe, that they have the option. Their option for gaming is through a commercial license. It's not as of right on gaming lands and. We're going to work our way through that, and I think we'll land where we are right now.
You know, Jim says the prospect of 5 casinos and a slot parlor, whatever you said, but it could go the other way at the rate we're going here too. With East Boston not approving the casino, I know there's some talk about it going to Revere. I'm not sure that that's actually feasible. Mm-hmm. Milford has a vote on Tuesday. We learned this morning the state can't complete the background check of the casino up in Milford because it hasn't identified a major source of its funding.
You mean the Gaming Commission?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. The Gaming Commission. That's right. So it is possible that all that's left is Everett, where everybody seems to want it in Everett.
For Eastern Mass, for the Eastern Mass Casino?
Yes, exactly. So it could be a much smaller actual casino numbers built, or slots for that matter.
I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. I mean, that's what the bill contemplated, Marjorie. Not that there would necessarily be 3 resorts and 1 slot parlor, but that there could be up to that many. And the reason, you know, back to the earlier question from I think it was Mike, the reason for the local input is that individual communities may say, I kind of like the idea in the abstract, but I don't want it in my town, and that's okay.
Governor, one more thing about the potential for this ballot question on the ballot next year. And for those that know—
Still on casinos, you mean?
Yeah, on casinos. Mm-hmm. Scott Harshbarger, who is not exactly a bomb thrower, a former attorney general, ran for governor on the Democratic ticket, is one of the leaders. He was with us last week. I was speaking to somebody, you know, Charlie Baker, last night, who said, quote, he could consider voting for the repeal. Do you think casino fatigue has set in Massachusetts in general when they hear about the Caesars thing, the potential thing in Milford, the vote in is the environment changed from the day you signed the bill into law?
I don't know. I mean, it's probably too much to say that I'm sick of it. but this is not – look, this is not the centerpiece of our growth strategy or economic future by any means. This is an entertainment option, and there will be some jobs that come with it, I'm certain, with the facilities that that communities decide they want. And it doesn't all have to be done right away. It can be done over time and over the years. You know, you might try out one for a while and come back to it in a couple of years. A couple of years' time. That's okay.
Would that be a good outcome? I'm sorry to quote Charlie Baker a second time, but when he ran against you, his position was 1 casino, see how it goes. That wouldn't be a bad way to start in light of what we've gone through.
Well, you have a bill which allows for that. That's my point. It's not about we got to have 3-1 right away from day one, and if it didn't happen already, then the bill is a failure. You know, come on.
What do you mean? And one last thing. You said you're sick of the whole thing, and you were laughing. What are you sick of?
No, people ask me all the time. People. Reporters, yes. Who are people, of course.
Some of them are, not all of them, but yes, some are.
Reporters ask me all the time, you know, when there's a vote or a development of some kind, like the ones you mentioned, you know, what do you think about this? And I always say, you know, it doesn't matter what I think. The law leaves that to the commission. It's rather nice to have it left to the commission.
Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will mostly focus on your calls. I want to ask about a bridge that went up over a weekend,
which I think
is exciting. The governor will take your calls to 1 o'clock at 877-301-8970. We'll be right back.
WGBH News presents a week of focus coverage. You're not alone, caring for our elderly parents. Join us this week on WGBH Radio, WGBH 2's Greater Boston, and online at WGBHnews.org.
This week on Innovation Hub, simultaneous translation. What if you gave a speech in English?
But what came out of the PA system was his voice speaking Chinese.
Tonight at 9 here on WGBH Radio.
Funding for our programs comes from you and Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts, dedicated to helping its members live happier, healthier lives. It's not just Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts. It's Blue Cross Blue Shield of you. And Dover Rug and Home. Rugs, carpeting, hard surfaces, and window treatments for today's lifestyle and many budgets. You can visit Dover Rug's new showroom in Natick, featuring a squash club, or doverrug.com.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. This is part of the hour where the governor spends time with us and you in studio.
We're going to go back to the calls, and I want to acknowledge the emailers that are also worried about their insurance for the MassHealth Connector. We're going to forward these emails to the governor's office so you'll have them. Okay, let's go back to the calls.
You know what? Let me also get the telephone number for the call center for people who have health insurance issues. If you're having trouble getting information on the website, and then we can broadcast that before.
That's what people are concerned about. One woman said she's concerned because she's been calling and they told her she could not do it that way. She had to do it on the website. So we have several emails and we'll forward them.
Yeah, no, we'll get to just people not to worry. Be patient. We will get folks sorted out. No one's going to be left high and dry if I have anything to do with it.
And you do. Back to the calls, Governor.
Margaret is calling from Lexington. Margaret?
Hello, Governor.
How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you.
Good. I'm calling. I want to change the subject slightly. I worked last spring and winter for the Campaign for Our Communities,
mm-hmm.
which proposed a budget that was very much in line with what you were suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm rather disappointed that few of the programs were actually funded, and your budget didn't really get very far within the State House. And I want to know if you have any insights about what you might do differently or how you might advise us in the future to promote some of the items that you had on that agenda, including rail development, mm-hmm. and infrastructure improvement and that kind of thing, because
mm-hmm.
I and others worked very hard for this kind of thing, and we're very disappointed that we didn't get any further.
Well, so Margaret,
I'd like to have your advice.
Thank you. Thank you, first of all, for working very hard. It did make a difference because, in fact, I think we won the point among most of the public, meaning that if folks wanted a truly up-to-date transportation system and one where which would require, frankly, about a decade of consistent investment, and wanted the kinds of investments in education that assured universal pre-K, for example, a very high impact public investment in terms of strengthening the economy and the society over time, that it was going to require a modest increase in taxes. And the way we proposed to do that, as you recall, is to basically cut taxes, cut the sales tax, which is, I think, in many people's view, regressive, and have a modest increase in the income tax so that people who were doing better would contribute a little bit more. I think the concept – I think that approach for those reasons, according to all the polls, the public was with us. I think that the business of legislating is hard. It's complicated. It takes getting a whole lot of different opinions to be voiced, to be heard, to be respected. I think, you know, we went on a campaign with your help and others in the larger public and in the building, but mostly in the larger public, to make sure everybody understood what we were talking about and had a chance to react to it and so forth. And there were many, many hearings as well. What came out of the legislature in the end, and I say this with due respect to the legislature, but as no surprise, was disappointing to me too. And in part because it came out on one day and they took a vote on it, you know, I think it was 6 or 7 days later without any hearings, and with a lot of expressed frustration from me and from others that it wasn't actually meeting the needs. But you know, the legislatures continue and administrations there'll be another administration soon, and I think you and the larger public and the legislature are going to have to come back to this. They didn't do nothing. Don't feel totally deflated. They did increase the gas tax by, I think it was three.
I think it was three cents, but with an inflation adjustment.
With an inflation indexing. And that's a step in the right direction, no doubt about it. And then they moved a bunch of other things around in the budget to fund many of the priorities that were important to me and important to them and to you. So it's it wasn't a total win, but it wasn't a total loss either. And I think concerned and engaged citizens, particularly those thinking about the long term, like you, Margaret, are going to have to keep coming back at it, through your reps and senators, and making sure that they feel they have that you have their back when they come in and take a tough vote.
Margaret, thanks for the call. Governor, while we're on the subject, since Margaret broached it, I know there have been a number of visits you've made around the state about some capital investments on the transportation front. Could you briefly tell us what some of those things are and end with my favorite, government happening in the last few weeks, a new bridge in a weekend on Clayton Street. So if you could do both, it'd be great.
Well, we have we've been using those new transportation resources and the rest of the capital plan to really invest in those things that we know grow opportunity and grow jobs in education, in innovation, and in infrastructure. And in the case of infrastructure, we have announced housing plans, various local transportation projects. I was out at in Westwood yesterday, for example, on a relatively modest grant, public grant that leverages millions in private investments in something called University Station.
Oh, I saw those pictures.
Did you see that?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a very cool thing. And actually, this idea of millions of dollars, but I mean in relative terms, a little public money leveraging a lot of private investment is a really winning strategy for us. And there are lots of examples of this around the Commonwealth. The project that you're excited about, Jim, I'm excited about too. This was the Clayton Street Bridge, which is a bridge that carries the Red Line. I think it's between Savin Hill and and Fields Corner. And, you know, when a bridge on the Red Line is out of service, you got a real problem. On any rail line is out of service. So we used a technology and a method that we have been learning over the last few years. We did and basically we built the bridge on the side and came up with a plan to take the old bridge down. We built the new bridge on the side to take the old bridge down and install the new one over a weekend so we could just disrupt service for a short period of time. And it went beautifully. It was finished ahead of schedule. And it was actually quite a marvel to see. This is we've done this before. It's the first time on a rail bridge, but we've done it on road bridges. And we did 14 of these bridges on I-93 North over 10 weekends 2 years ago. It's fantastic.
I love it. Let's go back to the calls. Governor Deval Patrick.
Let's see. Gary is calling from Framingham. Gary, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
Good afternoon, Governor. Governor, I wanted to thank you for your historic support for disability programs from the time when you were head of the Office of Civil Rights through your administration. I wanted to briefly ask you, given the state of the budget, do you think that your FY15 budget you're preparing right now will be able to address the state's obligations to meet Chapter 257 and DAHAB obligations to increase the pay of low-paid community workers and also to support disability employment reform?
Gary, that's a mouthful. But
I usually give you that.
You do. I'm going to do my level best. I mean, I think, first of all, I want to thank you for acknowledging the work that we have done in the administration and that I've done before. And I think I know which Gary this is by the voice, a fabulous advocate for people with disabilities. And I hope you know that I see the population you serve. And I value the population as full members of our society. So we're going to do the very best we can. It's going to be a tough budget for reasons that came up in the context, really, of Margaret's question just before yours, as you know. But we'll look forward to working with you and doing the very best we can.
Gary, thank you very much for your call.
You know, Governor, I mentioned you before the show. I was surprised
You're
to read.
Pointing your finger
I'm
at
pointing
me.
My finger at you. That's right. I'm sorry.
For emphasis.
I shouldn't do that. But before the show, that I was surprised to read, I don't know if it was in the Herald or the Globe this morning, your salary is $139,000, which is no small amount of money. On the other hand, in Massachusetts, if you've got three or four kids, you've got a spouse that's at home, you know, the mortgages are huge, there's no governor's mansion here, it's not a lot of money. What do you think? I mean, you're going, so you're not going to get a big raise yourself. But so this is not a self-serving thing that's going to help you. But what do you think is a reasonable salary? Because you have only rich people that can afford.
Well, on your last point,
yeah.
I am very worried about. I mean, I'm blessed. You know, I made a little money before I
in the private
ran.
Sector.
My wife still works in the private sector, but we are setting ourselves up, I think. To have the kind of set of circumstances where you have to be pretty well off in order to do the job, because there's other stuff that goes with it. You know, there's entertaining you should do. There's there's stuff you should do, and you know, mostly I either do that out of my own pocket or out of the pack that we have. Don't cry for me. I'm not.
I'm not crying for you, but you know what I'm saying.
I worry about that. You know, I remember reading about Jane Swift.
She struggled.
You know, sleeping on the sofa of her relative when she was here, and then having to schlep 2.5-3 hours home to Williamstown. And it's you ought not have to have live in the neighborhood of Beacon Hill in order to be governor. The governor's salary is actually higher than 139. It's not much higher, but it's higher. And for a variety of reasons, I haven't taken those increases yet. As the economy has come back and the budget's gotten stronger, I might before it's all over. But there have been studies about what I think the mayor makes maybe twice that.
I think he makes, I don't know what he makes, but what do you think the governor should make in Massachusetts?
I don't know what
200
the answer
grand?
Is. You know,
two and a quarter?
What's
half
the bidding?
A million?
What's the bidding?
But you know, the
you
issue.
Know, they have this, I think it's, is it Singapore where they pay public executives what a private executive would get, and they get a really competitive group of contenders.
But really,
for
you think
jobs.
About it. Charlie Baker did very well running Harvard Pilgrim. He's made, I think he's a millionaire. Mitt Romney, a millionaire many times over.
Yeah.
You did well in the private sector.
80 millionaires in the United States Senate, give
yeah,
or take one
so
or two.
It does mean that there's almost a, that if you were someone in Massachusetts, I mean, if you were in Mississippi or something, it would go a lot further. But in Massachusetts, that's not a big salary.
Yeah, it's not an issue you get a lot of sympathy on.
No, you don't. But it just – I was surprised by it.
Did you ever think of – I mean, it's not just you. I mean, you're running close to a $40 billion enterprise. I know you know far better than I. Judges, the same deal, leaving the private sector and working for – I don't know what a judge's salary is, but it surely is not a huge
amount.
It's just gone up.
To
it's
what?
Just gonna. I don't remember what it was. Going up in two stages, starting January.
They get 8 weeks vacation.
But is this an impossible thing for anybody to really take on? Because even if you propose something and we're willing to take the heat, I'm assuming the vast majority of legislators don't have to go home and explain to people who are struggling to make ends meet why they just gave a real world increase to judges and governors and constitutional officers.
Well, the legislators did it in the last budget for judges. It was a big vote. It was an important vote, and they got a lot of encouragement to take that vote from business leaders and members of the private bar, because they get though money isn't the central reason why people come to actually, it doesn't have anything to do with why people want to be a judge. You certainly want to. You want to pay enough to respect the position, the demands on the position, and not have to settle because you're not paying a living or a livable wage.
So how do you deal – very quickly on this. How do you deal with the fact – I mean, Marjorie mentioned Charlie Baker did quite well at Harvard Pilgrim for a few years. You obviously worked at Coke and Texaco and did quite well there too. Let's assume people have – average jobs who want to lead the Commonwealth or be the Attorney General or whatever and make $72,000 a year or $46,000. The reality is they can't do it as a practical matter. They practically have to starve themselves. So what's the reform that allows real people to run for office and not be worried about their families?
First of all, Jim, there are a whole lot of people in state government who make $40,000, $30,000 and run to work.
Good point, yeah.
And run to work. And they bring – that spirit of public service to it, and it's an awe-inspiring thing. And, you'd want that same spirit in the people who run for office as well. And I think on the whole we have that. It's not a very sympathetic issue. It's unlikely to – maybe one day the business community will step up and say it's time for us to do – to re-examine – all this stuff and make some adjustments. I think it would probably have to come from them then before it comes from me.
Maybe you can make some real money being head of the Olympics campaign. Very quickly, you signed the bill that allowed there to be a commission to look into 2024. Is that right. Real or is that some sort of fantasy?
Is the bill real?
No, I know it is. But I mean, is the prospect of us having an Olympics in Greater Boston in 2024, is that even marginally real
in
your estimation?
That's what the commission's supposed to sort out, whether it's feasible. I actually worked on something like this almost 20 years ago.
Which was
when? An initiative that John Hamill was then pushing. I was still in
from
practice.
From Shawmut, or one of the banks,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the head of the United States Olympic Commission came. We had a lunch for him and made a presentation, listened to him about what the prospects are might be and how to go about it. Whether it happens or not, the fact that we are willing to think big like that is important for this community. It is important. We need to start acting like the world-class community we are. And that means sometimes having big ambitions for Boston and for the Commonwealth and pursuing them, even if we don't win every one.
In that note, do you want to give us one sentence on the outgoing mayor and one sentence on the incoming mayor of Boston?
Love them both.
What's your working relationship like with Marty Walsh? The Herald did a story about a whole spectrum of initiatives. You worked on one of your people, I can't remember who issued the statement, said, we've actually reached out to him for some really important tasks during our campaign, during our governing. What is a good example of where you needed Walsh and he came to your defense?
Well, he's been a great ally. You know, I had to learn. There's been a lot of emphasis and you know, to my way of thinking, some of it overemphasis on his relationship with organized labor, mm-hmm. because his relationships go beyond that. But when I was getting started, I had to learn what to do. In terms of, you know, how you engage with organized labor, how do you, you know, I was the long shot candidate. I wasn't a member of the establishment. I believe in collective bargaining, but I've also been on management side, so I get that that tension, that occasional tension. And he was enormously helpful in helping me understand what the issues are, what some of the language was. You know, and how to engage with people in a way that was respectful without, you know, just sort of throwing up my hands and saying whatever you want.
Fair enough. Let's try to get a couple of more calls in before you go, Governor.
Sure. Scheherazade. Am I pronouncing it right?
How great is that?
Scheherazade.
Scheherazade.
Wow.
How exotic.
Yeah, it's a great name.
Calling from Quincy. How are you?
Fine, Governor. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
It's a different kind of question. How do you deal with the, shall we say, the font of affection that you engender from your own communities, women, the black females, as being the first black governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts? It has been several decades since Edward Brooks and many, many years for New York since an Adam Clayton Powell or a David Dinkins in New York. How does a man in your position handle or deal with the agape, if you want to call it that, of the women or the teenage girls, if you will, the females in your own community who would embellish you with a communal affection?
Wow.
And admiration.
Who knew?
For being the first black man to leave state. Is it, what challenges does that present itself to you?
Wow. That, thank you. thank you. I don't know that I have perceived a special font of affection from black women as a group. I do from the black women in my household, I'm happy to say. and that is a blessing. But no, I think, you know what, I get visits from time to time from school kids, some by plan and some are just in the hall and you meet them. And when the kids come in, and you have a chance to, you know, actually talk with them or have them sit in the governor's chair and behind the desk and get their picture taken, that is a pretty special thing. And I hear later, and I get marvelous mail from the teachers or grown-ups talking about how that child months later, years later, is still talking about that visit. And that is meaningful in ways it's very hard for me to describe. I think because I know what an impact it was on me to have an adult pay attention to me and give me a sense of what it might be like to imagine a different path for myself. So if I'm able to do that for a kid, and I think I have been able to on a couple of occasions, it's pretty darn enriching.
Scheherazade, thank you for a great question.
That was a great question.
Let's try to squeeze
Governor,
one more in, Governor,
muffin.
If we can.
We didn't know. There you go.
Let's see. Alan is calling from Middleborough.
Hi, Alan.
Hello. How are you doing?
How you doing?
I'm doing excellent.
Good.
Just to go back to a quick point that you were talking about salaries for public servants.
Mm-hmm.
I serve as a selectman in the town of Middleborough.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't get paid a cent.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
See, I told you there wasn't going to be much. I was going to say, I said to Marjorie that this was not a subject that was going to bring much sympathy. But
what's your question, Alan?
Thank you for your service in Middleborough.
You're welcome. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
I'd like to know what the cost to the taxpayers has been for two negotiated compacts with the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe.
I don't have the number in front of me. I remember we got a budget from the legislature when the bill was passed for all of the outside legal work we were going to have to do of a few million dollars. I don't remember what the actual expenditure has been. But if you want to hang on, Alan, we'll get some contact information and I can get it to you.
Alan, stay on hold. One of our producers will take your number. Governor, before you go, you asked your colleague here, Bonnie, to look up the number for the whatever the connector is now called.
Yes, I'm sorry I didn't have this at my fingertips. But if folks are having trouble with the website, or frankly, if they would just prefer to talk to a person to get enrolled in the subsidized plans, the number is 877-MA-ENROLL. 877-MA for Massachusetts, enroll, E-N-R-O-L-L. And that turns into 877-623-6765.
And as we say at the end of every visit by the governor, everybody who sent an email, they'll be forwarded to the governor's office, to which he will respond. And if the remaining people online want to hold and give their phone number to our producers, the governor's office will be in touch with the governor. It's great to see you.
Nice to be with you.
Happy Thanksgiving. See you in December.
To you and to all the listeners, and everybody be safe.
Governor Deval Patrick joins us every month. We'll see him in December as well for Ask the Governor. When we come back, it's time for Open Mic with the Boston Globe's Alex Beam. That conversation next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.